Okay, we'll call to order the House Revenue Committee. Welcome everybody here today. We've got a few work sessions before us. I'll just say we will be talking about but not moving House Bill 2186 today. There are amendments for that that are not ready this morning, but we will be. I see we've got a couple folks signed up to speak to us on that, and even though we're in work session, we'll do that for invited testimony to give them a chance to speak. Let's begin, though, with a bill introduction. Might as well get that off the list of things to do. You have before you, committee, several LCs. LC 1724 is a committee bill at the request of Oregon Municipal Finance Officers Association. LC 1741 is a committee bill at the request of Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Fire District Directors Association, AFSCME, Oregon State Firefighter, and Oregon State Firefighters Council. And then you have other LCs, 1609, 2324, 2578, 2579, 2850, 2851, and 2852 that are committee bills, not at the request of any identified requester. Chair would move introduction of those LCs as I just recited them, making clear that 1724 is at the request of Oregon Municipal Finance Officers Association, and 1741 is at the request of Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Oregon Fire District Directors Association, AFSCME, and Oregon State Firefighters Council. Is there any discussion? Again, of course, introduction of these LCs as bills doesn't indicate any level of support by the committee or any member of the committee. Is there any objection? Hearing none, then those LCs, including the committee bills that are not the request of anyone, 1609, 2324, 2578, 2579, 2850, 2851, and 2852 are introduced. Thank you very much. Let's go on with a work session then on House Bill 2379. Mazin, we had some amendments to this since we last heard it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The Dash 1 amendment basically brings back the sunset of the reactivation of the measure from being sunsetted and elapsed for a year back to a continuous type of operation, so there is no room for any time to elapse. And this seems to be just doing what it was meant to do. However, with the bringing that sunset 1 year to the front, that increases by 1 year the impact for revenue on the local districts by that amount, basically about $2 million. And of course, the bill in all, just to refresh the memory, it's attempts to extend the sunset by 10 years on the distressed areas of property tax on structures and not land, and also extend that tax exemption to condominiums and make them in the way that they also could be evaluated on the 120% of value, but with different criteria. The extension of the sunset just continues the revenue impact done and examined in the tax expenditure report, but the expansion of it to condominiums adds about new $1 million impact to local government.
Thank you. Marge, before you come on up, I think we looked at these, as I recall, these amendments came on the morning of the hearing last time we saw this bill, and I think we just wanted to give you time to look at them and make sure that the amendments were satisfactory and did what you intended that they should do. Have you had a chance to look at those?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Marge Kafori, representing the City of Portland. Mr. Chairman, I have had a chance to look at the amendments. We heard the bill on the 17th of February, and there was a question about whether the amendment did what we intended it to do. And after the hearing, I talked with Mr. Johnson at Legislative Council, and we walked through exactly how he had written the amendment, and we are now completely satisfied that it does what we intended.
Okay. Representative Bridger.
Yes, I asked the question on the 17th when we heard the bill. At what percentage of you are in your land considered, you know, as distressed? Do you have that information today?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bridger, the bill limits the amount of land that we can designate as distressed at, I think, about 20% of the total land area. I do have a map of the area that we have designated as distressed. Some of that area has had a considerable amount of housing activity in it under this bill. Some of the areas have not had so much housing activity in it, in them. So we're far from expanding to the full 20% of what is allowed in the bill.
I was concerned that the person that testified before did not know the percentage. I feel that it's extremely important that a city be tracking the percentage of land that they're putting into a distressed area, and to always be able to say exactly what percentage you have. So that's just my own personal feeling. Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you. You may have gone over this last time. I was here, but I don't recall the testimony on this. What would the effect be on the development of housing in these areas if this bill were not to be passed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart. We have the program has resulted in the construction of about 2,000 housing units which qualify at the 120% or less of median housing price for Portland. We are the only jurisdiction, to my knowledge, in the state that is using this program, so the results of the program that are found in the tax incidence report are results that reflect right on what the city has been able to do. So for an abatement of about, I think, $1 million or more, approximately $1 million a year, we are able to produce that amount of housing that otherwise would not exist in Portland.
2,000?
2,000 units.
And may I ask,
sure,
over what period of time are we talking about?
We first accepted applications in 1992, so it's been 10 years, 11.
Okay, so it's been about $10 million then of tax abatement?
Mr. Chairman and Representative,
you indicated it was $1 million a year. I don't think it's that much, but
I'm sure
it is. yeah, it's about the total abatement in 0305 is estimated to be about 2.011 million.
I would doubt that the having started in 1992, you didn't start it at that level of abatement, so I would imagine the cumulative total would be substantially less than 10 times that amount.
Right, that's correct.
I would have thought so. And if I understand what you're telling me correctly, the tax abatement is an essential component in the financing of this kind of housing, with the kinds of rental restrictions and so forth that would be, or purchase restrictions that would be placed on it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, these are purchased houses. What this allows is for a low to moderate income person to actually afford to buy the house, since they are paying the house price is restricted at this point. It's $160,000 approximately. That suggests that the income levels are about $40,000 or less for people to be able to afford these houses. The fact that they're not paying property taxes on the value of the structure allows them, keeps the housing affordable for them so that they can purchase the houses.
And if I understand it correctly, it's your testimony then that these houses would simply not have been constructed at all were it not for this tax abatement.
It's our belief that I think it's not fair to say that no houses would have been constructed. There would have been some houses constructed, but certainly not at the level that we have been able to encourage in the areas that we have been able to encourage them to be built.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. I guess as long as I've called Marge up, anybody else? We're in work session, but does anybody else wish to testify on the bill before us with the -1 amendments? Committee, you have a letter in the file, from Oregon Revenue Coalition in opposition, but I understand they're not going to testify. We're in work session. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
Even though I just got here.
Sometimes that's best.
Have we adopted the Dash 1?
We have not.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2379.
Thank you. Representative Williams moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2379. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, they are adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
I would move House Bill 2379 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 2379 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, I think the important thing to point out about this and the next bill before us is that these are local option property tax exemptions. I, for one, am certainly comfortable in giving a community the ability to forego its own property tax for the purpose of meeting housing needs. I think that seems to be an appropriate and reasonable use of a tax exemption for property tax. Is there any further discussion? Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I'm reviewing this material from the Oregon Revenue Coalition, and I would have liked to have heard from them today about their specific objections to this particular property tax exemption. I understand and I agree, I think, with the essence of their criteria for assessing tax breaks and some of the other material that they've offered us. But my tendency is to agree with the chair on this one, that the local community is the one that's best able to make the decision about whether they want to forgo property taxes for the purpose of encouraging this sort of investment. And my inclination is to support the bill for that reason.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, I noted when I read the statements of the Oregon Revenue Coalition that on their second page, their criteria for assessing tax breaks, they want to promote certain things, including in tax breaks, including promote home ownership and affordable housing. Right. Certainly this is the purpose of this bill, so I would say that we are in line with their ultimate objectives in this tax break.
Well, if I may, I agree with that statement completely, and that's why the material on the front page is a bit puzzling to me, and I would have liked to have heard from them today about what their reasoning is for that.
Well, my expectation is we will probably be seeing letters like this just about every time we see a tax credit or tax expenditure, so some of them may be more pertinent than others, or maybe more pointed than others. I have a hand up in the back. Yeah, come on up. Now that we've been talking about you.
I represent Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. My name is Abby Solomon. I'm from SEIU Local 503, and I'm a member of the Oregon Revenue Coalition. And this is the first of many statements that you're going to be seeing from us. And really what it's not about this particular measure as much as we want you to be thinking about these questions when you look at every tax expenditure. And there is one piece, if you look at the bottom of our testimony, that if you see a tax expenditure that you feel meets the criteria that we've laid out and has merit, that we would like for you to look at having that combined with closing out an outdated tax expenditure that may no longer meet these criteria or serve its original purpose, and see if we can pass out only tax expenditures that in tandem with closing out an old one so that we can remain revenue neutral in a time of financial crisis.
Well, and I think that's a fair comment, perhaps about a new one. In this case, all we're really doing is continuing one that's in place and seems to be serving its purpose. Representative Williams?
Mr. Chairman, Abby, perhaps you could tell us how the Oregon Revenue Coalition believes that House Bill 2379 specifically doesn't meet the criteria when the third criteria is promote homeownership and affordable housing.
We do believe that it meets the criteria, and so we just want to raise it so that you can think about taking out possibly another outdated tax expenditure to leave it revenue neutral.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
And is that the basis, then, that you say that you jointly offer testimony in opposition to this bill? So you oppose this bill, even though it meets your criteria?
We're going to oppose all new tax expenditures unless they're moved out in tandem with closing out another one. So it's not to pick on this one in particular as much as to oppose all new ones unless they A, meet the criteria, and if they meet the criteria that they are put out in combination with closing out another outdated tax expenditure.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I just think at this point then it makes the criteria and understanding what you oppose and what you don't oppose almost useless to me from an evaluative standpoint on the committee. If you're going to put in a piece of testimony in opposition to every single tax credit, even if it meets your own criteria, I don't know then how to really evaluate anything the Oregon Revenue Coalition is going to put in as testimony in front of this committee.
Representative?
Well, I certainly agree in principle that this isn't the time to be raising taxes unnecessarily. I do believe that this is probably the best reason to provide tax abatements for any properties. And I'll echo my colleagues that I really look forward to sending this to the floor. I'm very excited about the job that the City of Portland has done, and hopefully we can spread the wealth a little bit throughout the state. Thank you.
There's another hand down here, was there? Okay. All right. Thank you, Abby. All right. We have the motion before us on the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Representatives Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Taft?
Aye.
Hoffman?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Chair Shetterly?
Aye. House Bill 2379 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a volunteer for carrier?
Sure.
Let's have Representative Williams do this one. Pick up the right end of the table on the next bill, which will move along similar lines. House Bill 2380, let me open a work session on that. Mazin, nothing has changed on this one since the last hearing, has it? I think we just held this one up to move it at the same time as 2379, isn't that right?
Mr. Chair, our understanding of this bill is slightly altered to have a revenue impact at this time.
Do we have an amendment?
No, but the reading that the way it was actually to offer a new program, not only the timing type of thing, that understanding was also the understanding of the county assessors at one point, and now after we read it a couple of times, and explained by the City of Portland, we understand that this is a slightly new program that has
Marge?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Marge Kafori with the City of Portland on House Bill 2380. Again, we heard this bill on the 17th of February at the same time you heard 2379. It was held up primarily to move both these companion bills at the same time. This is a new program. The focus of this program is on rental housing to keep the housing in a rentable, affordable state by offering a property tax abatement in exchange for putting the housing into a housing assistance contract and keeping it in the housing assistance contract, thereby keeping it affordable. I provided Mr. Malik with some information about how we think the program might be used. This program currently has a sunset of 2006, so we would be able to use it for 2 years before it would expire, since it would take us about a year to develop the procedures and have the ordinance passed by council as to how the program would be administered. So we estimated that we would have a total of about 6 buildings in the program. I think that might be a little bit ambitious because it would be a new program, but we estimated about 6 buildings in the 2 years that the program would be in existence, and we estimate that we would be abating approximately $130,000 of property taxes in 2005.
Okay.
Nothing else has changed.
All right. Questions for Ms. Kafori? Again, sunsets, we'll have a chance to evaluate this and take a look at whether 6 buildings was too ambitious or not, I guess. And once again, a local option.
It's a local option.
All right. No amendments. We have the bill before us unamended. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I move House Bill 2380 to the House with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2380 to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Taft?
Aye.
Hobson?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Chair Shetterly?
Aye. House Bill 2380 goes to the floor with a due pass. I heard somebody down here volunteer on the last one, Representative.
If I'm not being too hoggish.
Far. I'm not keeping track of how many everyone's carrying. Maybe I should start, but that's fine. I'll be Representative Far. If anybody feels like they're being slighted, please let me know, and we'll make sure you get on the list. I want to be fair here. Do we have time to... No, we have time. Are we ready to knock out 2312 quickly, then we can finish up with a discussion of 2186? Who do we need for 2312? Huh? Dick. He's doing some equations, yeah. I'm sorry. Giving his logarithms. We'll stand at ease for just a minute here while we bring Dick Yates down to do House Bill 2312.
Oh, this is a very long bill.
Yeah. This one looked pretty simple as I was reading it last night.
Right.
I almost hate to make him walk down the hall for it.
Yeah, this is. They all look simple.
Pardon? Oh, is he? We can move on if he's not readily available. There he is.
Ooh.
I knew we could smoke him out.
It's really.
Okay, let's open a work session on House Bill 2312. Dick?
Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. Mr. Chair, this bill simply takes definitions that exist in statute already and limits their application essentially to the qualifying statute under the Master Settlement Agreement.
Okay.
It has the advantage of not defining cigarettes twice in the law.
Okay.
As well, it's making it clear, essentially, that the definitions there are ones that are required under the Master Settlement Agreement. And just makes it clear that they apply to that agreement.
Would it be fair to characterize this as a housekeeping bill?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Is there any committee discussion on House Bill 2312? All right. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
I move that we move House Bill 2312 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Representative Scott moves House Bill 2312 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Hatt?
Aye.
Hobson?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Chair Shetterly?
Aye. House Bill 2312 goes to the floor with a due pass. I'm not very taken with consent calendar, but Representative Barnhart, do you want,
Mr. Chair,
do you want to carry this?
I move that we place this item on the consent calendar.
Okay, I think. Is there any objection to that motion? It'd be kind of embarrassing to carry this, I think. All right. Well, if there's no objection, then we will place this on the consent calendar. And
Mr. Chair,
this is not going to become a habit.
I knew you was right sooner or later.
Okay, then let's go to... thank you, Dick.
You're welcome.
Glad we could give you the exercise.
Yeah, right.
Walk down the hall. Let's go to work session on 2186. Again, committee, we don't have amendments ready on that today, but we can talk about them. We'll bring up Lizbeth and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2186. Lizbeth, if you'll tell us where we are, where we've been,
sure.
And where we're going.
Where we're going, okay. Chairman Shetterly and committee members, for the record, I'm Lizbeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. Now, with House Bill 2186, as you remember, this is the revisor's bill.
or I'm sorry, this is a CPA connection bill, so we are connecting to a particular date for certain sections of December, with December 31st, 2002 as the connection date to IRS code. Now, as we've been talking about the dealing with rolling reconnect to taxable income, then we have the Dash 1 amendment, which is then going to eliminate that rolling reconnect to federal law changes pertaining to taxable income and establish a date certain connection to federal law of December 31st, 2002. Now, just as a side note, Chairman Shetterly, you asked me last time about the different states and giving them a call and stuff about what kind of changes they may have proposed dealing with their rolling reconnect. So I called Vermont, Rhode Island, North Dakota, Colorado, and Utah. And basically, with Vermont, they aren't in session yet, so they haven't really dealt with this issue. But Rhode Island was saying how they had been decoupled now from having a rolling reconnect to taxable income prior to the 2001 big changes with the Bush law. So they did not connect with the bonus depreciation or estate law changes or the net operating loss carry forward. So right now, and they don't see any, if there were any other future federal law changes, they would probably be following their past recent history of not connecting. North Dakota said that they, in 2001, had a very big discussion on this issue. They used to have their taxes based as a percent of federal tax liability. And in that case, then, what they saw was with the 2001 changes, when you had those reductions at the federal level in the tax rates, then that was a direct reduction then in North Dakota's tax, the income tax. So they, at that time, changed from being a percent of federal taxable income or federal taxable liability to being then just based on federal taxable income. So in their mind, they had made a step forward in disconnecting from federal law changes because they were no longer having their taxes as a percent of federal tax liability. So in discussing with the tax attorney, in his opinion, he felt like the legislature still wasn't really understanding that they were now still connected with federal taxable income and federal law changes would affect them. So in some respects, it's kind of perspective on what you used to have and then what kind of changes you've made. So with North Dakota, they're slowly moving away from being connected with the federal law, but they're now at the same level playing field as Oregon as far as, you know, having a rolling reconnect to federal law changes to taxable income. So they did not have any proposals or weren't having discussions about any type of change in their current rolling reconnect. Now, Colorado had an interesting twist. They have the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, which they passed 10 years ago. So basically, if there's a net increase in revenues at all, then that policy change must be referred to voters. So it really, their legal advice and legal counsel said that they could basically not delink to federal law changes without it being referred to voters. So in Colorado, they have probably even a worse situation as far as for the legislature to be able to do anything to make themselves not affected by federal law changes. And then in Utah, they said that there will be, they're just finishing up their 45-day session, and so they said that in this session they are having no income tax changes this session, and so they did not discuss this issue with the rolling reconnect. And they did discuss it during one of their special sessions in 2002 when they had the big bonus depreciation pass in 2002, which reduced their federal tax liability. But they decided to just, during one of their special sessions, fill that hole with bonding. So various states have done different things, but it's all kind of, I think, perspective and relative to what they've seen in their past.
Okay.
And with the exception of Rhode Island, Rhode Island's the only one that has disconnected.
Thank you for that update. We have before us the Dash 1s, which is just a straight disconnect with a December 31 date. I've had conversation with Paul about a more nuanced amendment, including some continuing connection on some issues. Are you conversant on that, or should we?
Yeah, I can just tell you briefly that.
Committee, this is sort of a preview of what I've asked to have drafted to replace the Dash 1s on this.
Yeah, and due to discussions with the Department of Revenue and things, too, as far as what are the hardest things would be the most difficult to disconnect from, some of the discussions have been around depreciation and then IRAs and other financial instruments like that. So we are having an amendment drafted to stay connected, have the rolling reconnected pertaining to depreciation and IRAs. And then another amendment dealing with going back to a rolling reconnect as of January 1st, 2006.
But prospectively. That's right. Deborah, do you want to talk to us about some of those issues on staying connected and what some of the issues are about that?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. As Lizbeth mentioned, depreciation would be one issue that would be simpler to maintain the conformity. Any type of issue where you have a timing difference and a basis issue is one that becomes more difficult. IRAs, employer-provided retirement plans, for example, if you think about a 401k, there are limits on the amounts of contributions that can go into those. Those are going in as pre-tax dollars. So for 2003, as an example, the limit for 401k contributions is $12,000. And that is pre-tax, so you don't pay tax on the amounts going in, you don't pay tax on the earnings as they accrue. When you receive a distribution, it's taxable. If you were to disconnect prospectively, that is, when I say disconnect, what you're doing is actually tying to the federal rules that were in effect on December 31st. So those rules say the limit is $12,000. If Congress were to change that later and say the limit is $13,000, then you could put $13,000 in pre-tax for federal purposes. For Oregon, you're back at the old rules, and you only have $12,000. So you have an addition on the Oregon return of $1,000, which really isn't a problem for that year. But in the future, when you take distributions, mm-hmm. it's all taxable for federal, but you've already paid some Oregon tax, and you need to figure out how much you're going to be taxed on by Oregon then. And if this goes on for a number of years, then you can imagine the difficulty people have in keeping track of what they've paid taxes on for Oregon purposes, sure. and so on. So in the early 80s, when you did do a disconnect, I think that was one thing that came up.
Yes, well, there's a history to this. You know, what else?
I think during the special session, you actually picked up the IRA and KEO increases. Because Congress had just changed those and gone to the $2,000 limit. So that's one one issue that comes to mind. Those really are the net operating loss provisions. You have specifically made a policy decision already to keep a rolling connect to that for individuals. So it's whatever is in federal law for that year, and that's in current law. So even a disconnect, unless you specifically amend that section, that would not change,
okay.
is my opinion. I can't think of anything else just offhand that really raises a red flag.
Elizabeth mentioned the depreciation. I guess, Elizabeth, maybe Deborah, as far as I know, is there the current tax plans before Congress, is there an aspect of depreciation in that that is significant? It's not significant, whatever it is. We've basically
right.
taken the revenue hit on depreciation and converse to the stimulus effect, whatever that will be. What do we have coming up in depreciation under consideration right now in Congress?
Chairman Shetterly, it was increasing that 179 expensing, so that threshold was going up.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a hit, but it was only, I think, about $4 million or something. It wasn't a
okay.
lot.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative
Hatt. I support your idea to amend your amendment, I guess. But I did have a question on depreciation. Do we need to do that? I mean, isn't this a 5 or 7 year schedule that, and it's kind of front loaded? Do we have to do that every year, or what would be the ramifications if we did it?
Mr. Chair, Representative House, the depreciation is a method of claiming the expense of an asset over a number of years. So if you think of a business buying an asset in year one and taking depreciation, they reduce the basis of the asset by the depreciation that they claim. So we could be disconnected for only 1 year, and the ramifications can extend for 10 or 15 years. As long as the person holds that asset, They're taking different depreciation amounts for federal and state purposes. When they sell the asset, they have a different basis, so they're reporting different amounts. If it's a capital asset and they sell it on the installment method, then as long as they're receiving installment payments, they're reporting different gain for federal and state purposes. So even a one-year disconnect can result in differences that are shown on the returns for many years.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Sure. Yeah, so that would make a lot of sense. I mean, it would be foolish of us to disconnect now after we've
right.
had, you know, the hit to our treasury.
Right.
I just didn't realize that you could do that 1 year at a time, I guess.
Okay. And the other aspect of the amendment that I've asked Elizabeth and Paul to have drafted includes a prospective reconnection date of January 1 of 2006, and I'll explain that to the committee. Again, we don't have it before us, but my intent, of course, in the next session, we would be looking at whether or not to retroactively reconnect to any changes that occur in federal law between January or December 31 of 2002 and the next session, and that would be simple majority vote to determine whether we want to connect retroactively to any changes that occur between now and then. And given the fact that we've had the reconnection on the books since 1997, I thought it would be fair to also revisit that issue in the next session. And by putting a prospective reconnect date out there of January 1, 2006, that really raises the issue to be addressed again in the next session, but by a simple majority vote. My concern was that if we made it a retroactive reconnection, that by putting that date on the books, it would take a supermajority not to reconnect. But by making it a prospective reconnection, then we're deciding this whole issue again next session just on the basis of straight up 31 and 16 votes. And that seemed to me to be the best way to deal with this, so that we're addressing the reconnection for the current biennium. We're basically with these amendments setting the issue to be addressed again in the next legislative session for a further policy consideration, but not in such a way that the dice are loaded either way. It's a straight majority vote up or down, both as to reconnect retroactively to any changes that have occurred between now and then and also going forward. Representative Barnard?
I think that is an excellent idea, and I think that the chair ought to entertain that kind of idea in connection with any kind of tax reduction that we might consider on any issue, precisely because of the unbalanced voting requirements that we now have in our Constitution. If, for example, we were to lower the taxes in some way, having a sunset on the reduction in that tax, whatever it might be, would have the same effect that you're referring to. The tax reduction would automatically go away at the sunset date without a new vote, which would require 3/5 majority, when the reduction only took a majority vote in the first place. So I think you're right on track.
I describe this sort of as the inverse of a sunset, which is a sunrise, but somehow it doesn't, it doesn't quite flow. Any other comments? We had, thank you, Deborah. J.L. Wilson and Joe Schweinhardt, do you guys want to testify, having heard what you've heard? Just to tell us what a great idea you think this is. What else? And again, so you know where we're going. That's why I wanted to have this discussion about the amendments, even though they're not in front of us today, so you know where we're going.
Thank you, Chair Shetterly and members. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson representing NFIB. I certainly appreciate the difficult decision you've got with 2186, and I know why it's attractive to the body. I would just say, as a policy, NFIB would be opposed to divorcing from the rolling reconnect. Our take on it philosophically is one of that Liz touched on, which is the regulatory components. And that is for a small business, and what we've heard is that we need a jumpstart in our economy, and we need to take a look at how regulations and taxes are impacting small business to get us going again. And the first, what I consider major piece of tax legislation, is something that, in essence, increases the regulatory burden with regard to tax compliance. And I just wanted, for the record, to put this out there, and that is, a small business does pay a disproportional cost for regulatory compliance, and this is from the biennial report of the Governor's Small Business Council, and that the majority of regulatory burden falls in tax compliance and payroll record keeping, small businesses report that 80% of their regulatory burden is in these two categories. So tax compliance is a very, very big issue for small business, and to the extent that this makes tax compliance more difficult, I would suggest it's probably not a good thing. But given the given the difficulty of where I know you are, the one thing I would absolutely urge is a date certain reconnect. The chair posed January 1st, 2006. Of course, I'd like to see it sometime in 2005, but whatever date you establish, a date certain reconnect, that is prospective, would certainly ease the pain. So I just wanted to put our perspective on the record with regard to the regulatory compliance problems that are going to be created out of this. And, I hope it's just a blip on the radar in terms of what, we're going to see. But
JL, I appreciate those comments. I guess, I hope that you do recognize some accommodation, and I think substantial accommodation. We're trying to. With the, for instance, the depreciation and the net operating loss carry forward, those kinds of things, which I think are probably the most administratively complex things to deal with on the disconnect. So we're trying to accommodate that concern as well. And I suppose two employee benefit plans when you're looking at what we will be staying connected to there. So I think we're addressing the biggest issues that do represent compliance considerations. Representative Vince?
I appreciate those comments, too. As far as changing the date or maybe making it sooner, it seems like you'd have to have a December 31st date or January 1st date just because of the tax year. And if you tried to move it up in the middle of the year, that would create some problems. And if you did it at the beginning, you couldn't do it at the beginning of the next session. So I don't know if we could do it much sooner.
Yeah, I thought January 1 of 06 is probably the earliest date, although, again, the next legislative session, since this issue will be before us, by virtue of this amendment, could always make any reconnection retroactive even to December 3rd or January 1 of this year, or certainly 05 when we're in session. And there'd be a good opportunity to have that discussion when we're in session. Representative Bernhardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've heard the conversation about the areas that would stay connected. As a small businessman myself, I was listening to the earlier testimony and thinking about the record keeping involved in that. Are there other areas that you're aware of that would cause that kind of problem?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, I appreciate where the chair is going with this, because the first thing I thought of was expensing limits and depreciation calculations. But anything with regard to the definition of taxable income would obviously fall under the measure, and it would seem to me that there are a variety of tax calculations that you'd have to juggle separately as a result of divorcing the tax code.
Right. Well, let me try again, if I may. We've already heard that tinkering with depreciation schedules and things of that sort result in multi-year recalculations of things. And I guess that's really what I'm asking about. Obviously, in any one tax year, you might have a different definition of taxable income for federal purposes than for state purposes on that one year. Mm-hmm. But what I'm concerned about is the need to keep track of all these records for many, many years and recalculate them each time. Do you see that there are other aspects that fall into that kind of calculation nightmare?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, on this one I'm going to have to say it'd probably be better left to a CPA or somebody more capable than I to flesh all of that out.
Joe?
Yes, sir. My name is Joe Schweinhart, Associated Oregon Industries. I was going to have a statement. I could probably sit here and give you a lot of reasons why we should keep it, and you'd give me one big reason why we shouldn't. But I do want you to know that it's my understanding that they're expecting to have this federal legislation done. Now, this is talking about the federal government, but they're expecting to have it on the president's desk by Memorial Day, May 31st. So it's possible that, it could be done at a later date, and I'm sure it won't happen tomorrow, but it's going to be moving forward. So I want to let you know that. And I do agree with JL's comments on where he's coming from with that. What I'd like to do is we talk to our membership, who certainly understands the situation you're in, but also understands that we need to be moving the state forward. And one person from Portland kind of said it all. I'd like to quote his statement. He said, "I understand the financial position the state is in. Good schools are a critical issue for the economic development and prosperity of the state. However, the state are so focused on short-term solutions that they are losing sight of the long-term impact of economic climate of the state. We're being told that these short-term solutions are temporary, but where is the discussion on long-term solutions? I fear 5 years from now, people are going to be asking where all the manufacturing jobs have gone, why the state is still having a fiscal crisis, and wondering why the state is not able to attract, let alone retain jobs, because we are still dependent on short-term solutions. Job retention is a huge issue the state needs to address. The state has disconnected and reconnected with the federal tax code in past, leading to confusion and minimizing any stimulus the federal tax changes are intended to achieve. Retaining the connection to the federal tax system long-term should be maintained. If Oregon is to disconnect, then there needs to be some assurances that reform of capital gains, R&D credits, and the inheritance tax do occur, and that a reconnect to the federal system would also occur based on some objective criteria to avoid political gamesmanship. What I'd like to do is take what you're really talking about in the larger picture, and that's some type of economic stimulus, some type of economic disincentive. And there's a series, each state has a business first or a business journal type situation. I pulled one out the other day from a mid-sized city in the Midwest. And some of their headlines on their business first page was, new plastic plant would create more than 400 jobs. American Greetings shipping some work from Arkansas. Humanasign's deal. CPAC opening an $11.2 million facility in Lyon County. An airport board approves contracts for more development. I'd like to see those headlines in Oregon.
What state were those from?
It's from Kentucky.
Is Kentucky connected to the federal definition of income tax?
Doesn't have the rolling connection. Okay.
But I'm not really the date certain. In terms of the reconnect.
Yeah, so they don't have a rolling reconnect.
In terms of the reconnect, it's really talking about economic stimulus and doing some disincentives to keep Oregon business here and keep it moving. And I just want to close with one statement that says, you know, we're not in a situation where we can stay in status quo. We either have to move ahead or we fall further behind. And what I like to do is think long term about doing things that move us farther ahead. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Although I happen to agree, and I have great difficulty with 2186, with the amendments that are potentially coming, and you know, I have reason to support this, although I do agree that if it stands alone and we don't initiate other items to help stimulate the Oregon economy, we're in difficulty, and I hope that this committee and or other committees find a way to do that.
I appreciate those comments. I think it's front and center on the governor's agenda all the way down to all caucuses that we've got stimulus is one of the most important jobs we have to do this session. So I wouldn't look at this bill in isolation. In fact, I think, especially with the -1 amendments, or the -2, if that's the way it's going to be, we're going to be try to be very accommodating to business needs, especially on the compliance issues, on the most complex matters involving the reconnection. And you will see stimulus as we move forward. So those comments are well taken. I don't think you'll find any disagreement on this committee. Any other discussion? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Vernon.
Yeah, a question. Elizabeth, you spoke to states that were on automatic reconnect. How about those who had recently done a date certain disconnect? Do you have any sense of, I mean, that's what we're proposing to do. What did they have to say?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Berger, no, I didn't do any other states than the five I told you about.
Yeah, I think the question last time was, what are these other states that have been on rolling reconnect?
It begs a further question, Mr. Chair, if you would. Some of them have disconnected. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious what it looked like after. We're proposing a course. I'm curious others have done it. What did it look like?
Representative Berger, I will say with Rhode Island, since they were the one that I called that did disconnect, the person I talked to just flatly said, you know, we can't afford it. You know, we can't afford to have any more reductions in our revenues. And so that was the legislature's decision. It was purely economics.
And on these other states, I'll bet you'll find that some states are in in Sweet Clover and other states are in the dumps. The factors are so multifaceted economic conditions and budget conditions in each state, it'd be hard to identify the connect or disconnect as being all that a specific cause or effect of any particular situation in the state. Representative Barnhart?
I've spoken too often, but I can't resist it one more, and that is this, that that I really believe that the tax rates that we have are such a small part of the actual operating cost of businesses that the rates themselves are unlikely to affect the business decisions. Now, record-keeping issues, yes, absolutely. Making it hard for small businesses to comply, absolutely. Those are important issues. But I think for economic stimulus, it's going to be far more important that we do things like getting our bridge and highway construction back on track, and that we do a better job of making sure that we've done the basic maintenance and that heavy trucks can move on the freeway and things of that sort, than the decisions that are likely to be made in this committee. Now, on any given bill, I'm ready to be proven wrong. Yeah. But it seems to me that our expenditure side in dealing with those issues is far more likely to have an economic stimulus in the economy than things that this committee is likely to do with the meager resources we have available.
Representative Farr?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair. Representative Barnhart and I agree on many things, and we agree that we have to fix our highways and bridges, but it's got to be a multifaceted front that we move forward on. And I think we all agree on that also.
And it's interesting, just in response to those, I remember Phil Romero spoke to the tax options and school accountability work group down in Eugene. It's kind of a mixed bag. I think he said that rates actually are more important in your small business, the kind of folks JL represents, less so on your multinational or multi-state corporations that are looking for other things and can kind of spread that tax burden across states in which they operate. And so the rates do vary in importance depending on the nature of the business. Joe?
Chairman Shirley and Representative Barnhart, I'd like to agree with Representative Farr, there's a lot of things that play into this. But I think when you look at it, first of all, we're looking at small business for 98% of the state. Small business is a very small margin of profit. And that is obviously being eaten into because all of our profits are down, corporate taxes are down, our collections are down. We've got, you know, the highest minimum wage, close to the highest minimum wage. We've got the energy costs they must contend with to keep going up. We've got the highest capital gains. We've got a high marginal income tax. Our medical insurance costs are not cheap. It looks like they may be taking a hit during this session. We're looking at a lot of different aspects of this that business has to contend with that keep going up, up, and up.
Did you mention energy?
Yes, I did. And it keeps going up. Those are the type things. And, yeah, there's this much here, and it keeps going, going, going. Now, where do they get relief for that? Well, they're trying to make this money, but every time they turn around, you want to raise corporate taxes. You want to keep capital gains high. They need some relief there to use that money to their business. And it's not happening right now. And that's the only point I would make is the only way they're going to get there, because they're going to have to deal with high energy costs, and they're going to have to deal with some of these, obviously, the minimum wage. But there are other ways to give them relief to try to stimulate that economy, give them less disincentives, and not just for in the state, but trying to get companies to the state. We want people hired. We want people paying taxes, and that's where the revenue for government comes from. And we want to increase that. And we think any break they can get to help put that money back in the business is better.
I've said it before, and I'll say it one more time, and then I think we'll wrap this up this morning. But, you know, Joe, I think we're in agreement there. And in fact, I think a substantial argument for the disconnect is to give up, given that we have a small margin in terms of the revenue that we can, the revenue hit that we can take going into this next biennium, that to the extent that we can use better focus. Revenue stimulus that is specific to Oregon and our needs and the interest of our businesses by disconnecting from the federal tax code prospectively, we give ourselves more margin to make those Oregon-specific kind of stimulus changes than if we lose whatever that amount is right now, $92 million, out the back door before we even get to talking about Oregon's capital gains or Oregon's research and development tax credit and those kinds of things. So I think this gives us actually margin to play with in terms of changes that will have a much more effective stimulus impact in Oregon than just the federal package. And again, that's arguable, I know, but I believe it in my heart. Okay. All right. Thank you. We have a good discussion on this. We have promised committee. We'll get this back on. Is it Thursday?
Yes.
And we'll wrap this up. And we will be in recess now. I have a meeting in Portland that I will not be able to attend at 3:30 for. Are we going to have a quorum for bill introduction? We need a quorum for bill introduction. Okay.
I'll be here.
Okay.
Looks I'll like
we've got enough folks around the table. Paul, can one of our vice chairs sign the bill backs? Okay, because I will be gone. I'll be gone through the rest of the day. I've got a 4 o'clock meeting in Portland. I'll be back in the morning, but today's the drop date, isn't it?
Yeah, it has to be at the desk by 5 o'clock today. Yeah.
So we'll just have one of our vice chairs. Well, you're going to be here, Representative Scott? Okay, for sure. Then.
Either that or perhaps you've got the ability to sign them provisionally, too, Mr. Chair.
I'll check with staff. I just want to make sure we have a quorum and that one of my vice chairs is...
No, you're...
Folks, we are then recessed, not adjourned, but recessed until 3:30.
Committee meeting this afternoon. Welcome everybody back. I would entertain a motion to reconsider the introduction of LC 2578.
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote on LC 2578. It was introduced as a committee bill.
Vice Chair Scott moves that we reconsider the vote by which LC 2578 was introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? If not, those of the opinion that we reconsider the vote by which LC 2578 was introduced as a committee bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll or with no objection. So ordered. Motion carries in I would so move that LC 2568 is introduced. 68. LC 2568 is introduced as a committee bill. Clarifying the bill was entered as a committee bill but does not indicate support or opposition by the members of this committee. So, with those of the opinion, I will just say with no objection. With no objection, the bill is passed. All right. Now we have the following. LC 2911 is the bill at the request of the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. Should there be some discussion on this? No? All right. Next is LC 1199, LC 1510, LC 1653, LC 2322, LC 3176, LC 3253, LC 3308, LC 3309, LC 3349, LC 3438 and LC 3476-1. These are entered all as committee bills. Committee and does not indicate support or opposition by any member of the committee. Without objection, I will enter these in the record.
Introduce the bills as committee bills. Is that what you're doing, Madam bills. Chair?
Those are committee bills.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Do you have a form?
Yeah.
Is there anything else, Paul?
Yeah, I may have something else. Which one do you have in there?
The sunset on tax expenditures.
Okay. I did not see that.
You have five. You only need five. All right. We will stand at ease, committee, for just a minute. We have some other business to take care of.
I'm sorry, Madam Vice Chairman.
We had a quorum without you.
What happened to you?
I got waylaid between the elevator and here.
Oh. You have to be stealthy.
I know.
That's true.
I haven't figured out how to part the water yet. Remember
that. That is very true.
I just put your note on it, your name, and gave it.
The elevators have been so busy today that I just got on one and rode up.
She said she was going to try to get.
I'd have been here on time if I hadn't had to walk through the entire gauntlet, listening the whole way to a bill.
Well, just for your information, we clarified a number on a committee bill that we sent out today.
That first one?
It was LC 2570. Committee, if there's no other business to come before the body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.
Good enough.
Okay.